Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 18th of May, Anno Domini 2013, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. I apologize. I have not started the Hangout since they changed the way it works, and I'm a little confused. So we'll start with the news. It was shock and awe all over again, or perhaps when describing Google I.O., inundate and overwhelm would be the more apt description. In the nearly four-hour keynote this week's Developers Conference in San Francisco, Google executives swaggered through a laundry list of announcements and put Apple on notice that Google is here to dominate. But first, what was noticeably lacking? Google served no key lime pie to attendants hoping to hear more about the next version of Android, nor was there any mention of Google Glass. Here's what Google did announce, starting, fitting for a developers conference, with new APIs, application programming interfaces. After heralding an amazing year for Android developers and the more than 900 million users for the Android OS, Google announced an update to Google Play services that included new APIs for Google Maps and Google Now. Google launched three new location APIs, including a low-power location mode that should extend battery life. As for developers, Google unveiled an early access preview form of Android Studio, a tool based on the community edition of the JetBrains Intelligent J IDEA IDE for Java that features Android-specific refactoring and lint tools to catch performance issues. Google also announced App Engine 1.8.0 with a limited preview of the PHP runtime of the App Engine Cloud. It also offered deeper integration with other parts of the cloud platform, including Google Cloud SQL and cloud storage. In a move sure to get Apple's attention, Google rolled out a subscription music service that gives users unlimited access to millions of songs in returns for a $9.99 monthly fee. A 30-day free trial of Google Play Music All Access is available now, and users who sign up before June 30th will receive a $2 discount on the monthly fee. Also of interest to end users is the upcoming conversational assistant for Google Search that is capable of answering spoken questions like, will it be sunny in Santa Cruz this weekend? Once Google delivers an answer, you can continue the conversation with follow-up questions like, how far is it from here? Or, how about Monterey? Cloud social app Google Plus is also getting a makeover with enhancements to its photo editing capabilities and the additional features of instant upload, which lets you save every photo you take to the cloud for free, up to 15 gigabytes. Google Hangouts is now a standalone free app on Android and iOS that combines text, photo, and live video and a completely opaque way to start one. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google I.O.'s many announcements. The choices are, wow, can't wait, pretty interesting, bah, Apple will invent all of that stuff soon, and I don't understand any of it. So far, we've got 28 votes. Most of you, of course, don't understand any of it. Now, when you're done with that, I'm sure you'll have a lot more to say. So check out our forums. If you look at the far right-hand column and go down to the section labeled Fascinating Stuff, you will see a link to the forums. Once you are there, the second forum on the list is the poll discussion. And there's already a topic started for 18 May 13, Google's many I.O. announcements. And all you have to do is click on that. And then make sure you're logged in, of course, which you do about halfway down in the middle column at the login prompt, shockingly. Once you're logged in, you'll be able to then enter a reply. and chat with people. So do that. And so our question to you is, are you excited by the stuff Google announced? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And join in the fun. Google just was weird today. I actually had, so I'm behind in everything because it again asked me, are you sure you want to sign into this machine? You've never signed into it before. The heck I haven't. I've signed into it like 60 million times.
Yes. Yes, I have. Yeah. That's when you want to smack the computer.
Right. So I then had to get a cell, a text number, a text message with a number to put in, and I put the number in, and so that's done now. And now I'm trying to figure out how to do the sound bites thing. There it is. I can do that.
So I'm playing with the new Hangouts app because the G Plus app never worked for joining a Hangout.
Right. So I'm now calling sound bites, and I guess that's the way you do it. You can't just open up a, hey, everybody, come and play.
I got an incoming video call from you.
Ooh.
I'm going to answer and see what happens.
And yeah, see what happens. And there you are. You're in.
Nice.
I see Steve Ray's picture.
Volume down here. Thank you.
Yeah. You should mute
the
sound. Anybody who comes into it, it is now working. It's not on the air for some reason.
That's
feature. I don't know what happened there. This one's not going to be on the air, apparently. I'll have to figure that out at some point.
A different button somewhere.
Yeah. I don't know what happened there. You know what? And I don't care at this point. But if you join the Hangout, please mute your microphone so that because what happened on some of the others that we've had, some of the other chats that we've had, all you really hear are people coughing and chairs squeaking and soda cans opening. And it's a little less about the show than it is about the ambient noise in all the various places. But yeah, so that's what we're about. And Google show an amazing number of things. The system has Google has announced lots of stuff for developers. New looks for most of their stuff. You can get a new look for Gmail, new look for Google Drive a little bit, a new look for Google Plus. Of course, nobody likes any of the new looks because they're not the old looks. And I understand that. There are people who don't like the new soundbites look. But you'll get used to it. I promise you, you will. All you have to do is learn where everything is.
It moves.
Well, that's it. You know, like you say, it's like driving a car. You know how that's basically right. How to drive it. It's just that they might move the buttons here or there in a different place and a different way of doing things.
That's how it works. So that's where we stand with that right now. There are so many options. I know. We've the problem is we had there are so many front ends for WordPress, which is what we're running in the back of Soundbites. There's so many different front ends. I tried to pick one that was usable by everybody and easy to look at. And the problem is you can't have everything above the fold. You might have to scroll down to see some things.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though.
Get over that.
Yeah, but so many folks, how many years?
Yeah.
Was that old format held up?
Yep.
It's got to be over 15, right?
Yep.
When was the last major crash?
Yeah, right. Exactly. About 15 years ago.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, and just to come up with something different, and it's improved. I mean, the performance and everything else is a lot cleaner and faster.
It would be nice to have a Listen Live link under that call us.
Yeah. That. Well, yes. I will. That's a very good thing to add.
Scary if folks actually do.
Yep, they do. And I can add that. That's actually
edible.
Edible.
I think we almost blew out the
the thing?
The number over here. Yeah, that was 90. Last I looked, 98.
Nice.
And what we once we hit 100, that maxes out.
Yep. 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 But now people can also listen in via the IRC chat eventually. Clearly, that's that Dolores is here too. Hi there. But I think this is not going to be on air. I think that's somewhere else. I have to play with it during the week. I have not been. I have been remiss in playing with this stuff during the week because we went to Illinois and picked up my daughter from college. 2 days to drive out, a day there, 2 days to drive
back.
What
is that? Now the sophomore year is done?
Junior year is done. She's a senior now.
Whoa, yeah, wait a minute. Rewind.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still going back to, I remember when she was born, dude.
Yeah, so do I. I was there.
Yeah, I know, but I remember the day you couldn't come into the show.
That's right.
It's like, yeah, whatever, you know, yeah, get your butt here. Yeah. A senior,
it's just the birth of your first child.
A senior in college?
Yeah, she's a senior in college now. Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
You're getting old.
Wow. I am
You
old.
Might almost catch up
old.
To me. Yeah. Steve, we won't even talk about.
Shut up, you puppy. But yeah.
Hey, I'm almost 50.
Shut up. Shut up.
Bite me.
Wait till we're off the air. I'll tell you how I really feel.
Yeah.
That actually doesn't seem real because 50 used to be old. My parents were 50, and that was old.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah.
50 hasn't been old in well over a decade.
I know, yeah. Now, you know, 80 isn't old anymore.
At least that's not on camera.
Yeah.
My back is to the camera.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, we go back, and I had an occasion this week working on this other machine, and it still was running XP. And, you know, it's still a good operating system. And for what the person's doing, you know, I mean, it serves a purpose. And I can't fault them for not wanting to upgrade right now, you know, with money.
Except for the complete lack of security support
but
anymore.
Believe it or not, he's got a tablet now. He's got a tablet that he does his email and everything else on. This XP machine does his other business stuff that he wants to do that he doesn't really need the internet for.
Well, that's all right then.
So, yeah, and that's why I couldn't fault him. I said, you know, hey, because he goes, well, I've been really thinking about, you know, I hear that they're changing Windows 8 around, so it's going to have a menu. I says, yes, they're going to do that.
Theoretically.
Yeah, theoretically. And, you know, but that's going to take some time. And right now, this is working okay for you, and you've got this tablet. And it's working great for you, so what's the need? I kind of like the tablet, and I can go here and I can go there. And I got them set up on the cloud.
Yeah.
And with the Gmail and everything, his pictures, his documents, everything are up there. And he loves it because he can be off somewheres with his tablet, get at his documents, create documents, and the Google storage doesn't, you know, charge him for the extra stuff that he creates within Google.
And one of the things they did do is they merged the Gmail storage space with the Google Docs storage space. So now you get 15 gigabytes total to use for both.
Google mm-hmm. Docs, Gmail, and the Picasa, or the photo stuff, I guess you could call it now.
Yeah.
And so you get 15 gigs there. If you're one of the people who bought a Chromebook during the deal, you get an extra 100 gig for 2 years for free.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Of which I've used none. Because I'm using it for photos, of course. But in terms of documents, if you actually use Google format documents, right? You don't save them. You don't upload Word documents or Excel spreadsheets. Anything saved in the Google document format, it doesn't cost you in terms of storage.
Right.
So I've hundreds of documents up there, all of which are exactly zero.
Right. And if somebody needs to see a doc file, you convert it, send it to them, and delete it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You download it. When you download it, you have a choice of converting to something. So I can convert on the fly, send it to them, and I'm done. All right. We are going to take a break while we apparently go to Spain for the bullfights. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Larry from Rochester on the line. Welcome, Larry. What's up?
Well, I try and run Google Earth, and sometimes it'll run for a little while, and then I get a black screen. And the only button that works is a power button.
You should be able
What is your computer?
It's a laptop with 3 gigs of RAM, an Athlon processor. I'm not sure which one.
What OS?
It's on Windows 7.
You should be able to end the task.
I get a black or almost black, you know, like a really dark gray screen, and I try Control-Alt-Delete and every other thing I can think of, and the only thing that works is just power down.
What it sounds to me like is it's really not your computer that's the problem, it's your video card.
Okay.
Particularly if you have a video card using shared memory.
Yeah, is it onboard or is it...
It's a laptop.
Oh, then yeah.
So it's likely that he has a shared memory video card.
It's hard to say because when you buy it, you've got to ask the question. A lot of folks don't know to ask if it's got dedicated graphics.
And consequently, what's happening then, because of that, what's happening is you've got error. It's overflowing something in one of the registers and... killing your system because it's really designed to run on a fairly high-end video card because it's doing a lot of 3D and a lot of graphics stuff.
Okay. I'll go figure out what the video card is then.
Yeah, I am sorry.
I'm looking at the recommendations.
Are you running it in full screen mode or in a window?
In a window.
And the rest of the screen goes black, too?
Everything goes.
Hmm. Yeah, that's what tells me it's probably the video card. Yeah.
It's just flaking out the video card?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
Thanks for your input.
Yep.
Have a blessed day.
You too.
Hey, thanks.
And that we see that more and more as operating systems get cooler, frankly. Mm-hmm. They use more graphics processing to do those cool things.
And just the internet alone does.
Right.
And that makes it hot.
Right. And that makes it hot, right.
Yeah. And and die.
Right. Because, I mean, you look at the things that happen in Facebook and in Google Plus and in Google Drive and in Gmail and in all of these things. Outlook.com for Windows, whatever. They're doing all these sexy things with little pop-up internal windows and fading in and out and blah, 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 blah. And all that takes processing power. Well, most machines can handle that stuff. But when you do something like Google Earth, which is just massive amounts of graphics processing, if you have a lower-end graphics card, that ain't happening. It's just not going to work.
It should fail more gracefully, though. So I would check an update to see if they have an update out.
Right. And whether they have an update or there's an update for his graphics driver. That's certainly a possibility, Larry. You should check to see that your system is, in fact, entirely up to date, both in terms of the system itself and of the drivers. But and that driver may have to come from the manufacturer of your laptop. Also make sure, figure out whether you're running 32-bit or 64-bit Windows, because with three gig of RAM, particularly if you're not going to add more RAM, 32-bit would be better. It would actually take less of your operating system than 64-bit would.
I was skewing the new Windows 8 in our office today, and they still offer it in 32-bit version.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, why would they bother? Well, for too cheap a machine that has too little RAM in it. What's annoying, same thing they did with Windows 7. The OEM versions, 32-bit and 64-bit, are separate disks at a separate price that you buy separately.
Mm-hmm.
But the retail version is both disks in one box.
Right. They just want their money from you.
Blank.
Yes, I know. I'm going to read another email here. Previously unknown Mac OS X spyware. signed with a valid Apple developer ID is turned up on the laptop of an activist from Angola at a human rights conference in Norway. Security researcher and privacy activist Jacob Applebaum, or perhaps Jacob Applebaum, found the spyware on the activist's Mac at the Oslo Freedom Forum earlier this week. The activist's computer was compromised as a result of a spear phishing attack, Applebaum said Thursday on Twitter. The researcher claimed that he had copies of the attack emails and two different malware samples. Security researchers from Finnish antivirus firm F-Secure analyzed one of the malware samples and concluded that it is a previously unknown Mac backdoor program which appears to be signed with a valid Apple developer ID. Apple's developer ID program allows developers to sign their Mac applications with trusted digital certificates issued by Apple so they don't get flagged as malware by the gatekeeper feature in Mac OS X Mountain Lion. Signing your applications, plugins, and installer packages with a developer ID certificate lets Gateway verify that they are not known malware and have not been tampered with, Apple says on its developer website. The malware, which F-Secure now detects as OS X Kit M.A, takes screenshots without authorization, saves them in a folder for later uploading to remote servers. The malware contacts two command and control domains hosted on servers in the Netherlands, according to F-Secure's analysis. Antivirus firm Symantec has also added detection routines for the new threat, which is called OS X.Kitmos by them. In addition to taking screenshots, this Trojan program can download and install other malware and steal information, the company said in a technical document on its website. The malware can execute commands on behalf of attackers, can upload files from the compromised computer, and can manipulate the network activity indicator in order to hide its presence, Symantec said. Answering a question on Twitter on whether he plans to make copies of the spear phishing email public, Applebaum said that he's likely to write a blog post about it, but after first talking with the victim about some of the details, since their life might be in danger. So are you shocked by Mac malware? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Well, one good thing, at least, is since it was a signed security certificate, they'll know whose certificate it is.
Yes.
And be able to go to them and revoke the certificate and figure out how their certificate got loose.
Right.
So
right.
That might make it a little easier to trace who wrote the malware, theoretically.
Right. So I don't know. I don't know where that came from.
Although, since it was discovered on an activist's computer at a freedom of speech workshop.
Yeah.
Maybe it was government sponsored.
Well,
by an unfriendly government.
Who knows? But it's out there. Clearly, there are ways to get Mac malware onto people's computers, opening back doors, et cetera, et cetera. And again, most of them start out as Trojans. You have to actively click on something for something to happen. But so very many of us do. And this is one of the things that I've been fighting in the Mac world for a very long time. Mac people are constantly telling me, oh, I don't worry about opening stuff because I'm on a Mac. Yes, worry.
Yeah, really.
Worry just like everybody else. You need
They got
to
too
worry.
Complacent.
Yep.
That's exactly right.
We're
there's a myth that Macs don't have malware. That's untrue.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We used to be able to say don't open things from people you don't know.
Right.
But that doesn't hold true anymore.
No, because
someone you know may be infected and sending you an infection.
Well, that's the thing. Right. And there's other spoofers that
could
steal.
Be spoofed, yeah. I've been getting some really interesting email from my sister and my sister-in-law on really arcane technical subjects that I know is definitely not coming from them. And the return address is wrong, but somebody they know is infected, and it pulled their name and their address book and made it to me.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Wayne from Henrietta. Welcome, Wayne. What's up?
Hey, I just, how you guys doing? I had an answer for the gentleman who was having trouble with Google Earth.
Oh, very
video.
Good.
Recently pulling my hair out about that. And for those of you who have seen me recently, you know that that's more of an issue. But speaking of getting near 50. I don't have Google Earth running at the on the machine I'm on right now, but the... there's a setting in there for DirectX and what is it, GL mode?
Right.
You could try, if you're using one, you can try switching to the other, and that was a solution for me. I have a older NVIDIA card. It's about 6 or 7 years old, and that worked pretty well for Google Earth. And also, if you're using the Google Earth plugin on the web, if you go into the registry, you can actually toggle that within the registry for the plugin itself. So there may be a solution there without going to a different video card.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Wayne. That's good. That's good to know. Thank you. So if you're on, look in Google Earth. If you're using DirectX, try GL. If you're using GL, try DirectX. That makes sense.
Yes. And same as the plugin there. If there's a plugin that Google Earth has for embedding maps into your web page.
Yeah.
And that plugin actually has had all sorts of issues recently, but there was a new version that came out in the middle of last month, I believe it was, around April 16th, I think. And that solved the problem I was having with it not working on certain machines, but caused an additional problem, and that additional problem was that it would not work with that particular video card on the machine, of course, I was developing on. So,
of course.
So it took me a long time to figure that out, so I'm hoping that's helpful.
I also found a suggestion in the Google Groups help support about clearing your Google Earth cache.
Yes, and I found issues around that as well from building that page. If I updated the data, and anyone who was going to view the site, they would still see the old data. So I had to, with putting a .kmz file up there to read, I actually had to change the name of the .kmz file and then change it in my web page code in order for people to see the new data. They were still seeing the old data because the cache doesn't flush. Within the Google Earth program itself, if you're using the full program, there's an option there for flushing the cache. But if you're using the plugin and having people view the data on a website, there's no good way to flush the cache other than unless they know where to go, what folder to go into, and just clean the cache out. But or of course, entirely clean your browser cache. But
interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, it took me weeks to figure this out, so I'm not sure if that user was using it in any that type of depth, but in case he was, I wanted to help him in that way.
Right. I appreciate that. That's great. That's right. Great stuff. Thanks, Wayne.
Yeah, you have a great day.
You too.
And I don't know if you mentioned if he was using the Google Earth standalone program or the Google Earth web plugin, but whichever one you're using, try the other.
That's right.
It's nice to have choices sometimes.
Yeah, really.
I do like Google Earth. I use it fairly regularly.
It's cool to be able to get down to ground level and look all around and see.
Yep.
It's a very neat
all thing. The Easter eggs people have put into pictures when they know Google Earth, you know, cameras are going by.
Yep.
Well, they're not hard to miss because, I mean, here's these small compact cars with this tall stick and this camera bubble on top of it, driving up and down street.
That's Street View, yeah.
Street View, yeah. Have you seen the two Spocks commercial?
Yes.
From Audi? That is really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool.
And I looked up that car, the Audi autonomous car. They are the second company working on autonomous cars and behind Google, and they've got the second license in California and Nevada for autonomous cars. That car ran the Pikes Peak Challenge. 157 turns in like 22 minutes autonomously. It's a respectable time for even someone physically driving the car.
Yeah, right.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's respectable that they actually made it and didn't crash the car.
Yeah. And it doesn't have all of the whirligigs on top. That most of the Google's autonomous cars have a LiDAR, a reflector spinning on top, and radar and all these. But the Audi car looked like it had two or three extra little GPS tags on it.
Right. Oh, man, particularly coming home. I don't know what it was, but going, I didn't notice this so much, but coming home, the number of people who had extra antennas Not necessarily police cars. There was a guy who had at least a 6-foot antenna on his roof. He must be so deeply into CB or ham radio that it was kind of amazing.
It's like the commercial for the, what is it, the Hangover Part 3, where the guy's got the giraffe in the car. That 6-foot antenna, I'd be a little worried about bridges.
Well, it was on a, there was a spring near the bottom, so it would spring back. But all right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
We got to talk to him.
Yeah, I know.
Some of these
tunes.
Some of this
stuff comes from.
Too bad we don't know someone that used to be a DJ here.
Yeah, right, exactly. Or anywhere.
I don't know how to move those over. I mean, I know enough to be dangerous.
Yeah.
And I could probably play around, but I don't know where they loaded those songs. What folder?
Right.
Right. I could do some hunting. But I don't want to be responsible.
Right. Leave them. Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free. 1-800-790-0415. While I read the next news item. Windows 8, the most significant upgrade to Microsoft's operating system since Windows 95.
It's junk.
And one of the most important products in the company's history.
Junk.
Will not achieve enough adoption in enterprises to be considered a standard, according to Forrester Research. I know you're shocked, Dave. By the time the next major Windows upgrade is released, Windows 8 will be less than 50% of workplace PCs, unable to overtake its predecessor, Windows 7. I have to believe Microsoft expected better enterprise adoption for Windows 8, said Forrester analyst David Johnson. The lead author of the report, IT will skip Windows 8 as the enterprise standard, released Thursday. As it is, most enterprises have either the problem is not just that Windows 8 is bad, but Windows 7 is so good.
What did I say when 8 came out? I told folks, hear me now, remember me later.
Yep.
And that was how many months, matter of fact, it might even be coming up on a year, because we were doing it in beta. Yep. And I said then, and I can still say it now, you know, it was a piece of junk. People weren't going to like it. It was too radical of a change. It was designed for notebooks. Notebooks and phones. It's great.
Yep. Or Microsoft is 10 years ahead of the curve, because Apple's been talking about the post-PC world. In 10 years, will we have what we consider a PC now, or will everything be a tablet?
The problem, and this is actually something they bring up in here, the problem really is that they're trying to shoehorn one operating system into everything.
Mm-hmm.
And while Windows 8 might be great for tablets and phones, it's not great for PCs.
Nope.
And Apple has understood that. They have two separate operating systems. Google even understands that. They've got Android for phones and Chrome OS for Chromebooks. But Microsoft is trying to shoehorn one operating system and everything into one operating system, and it's just not going to work. No. As it is, most enterprises have either recently migrated from Windows XP to Windows 7 or in the process of doing so. In a Forrester survey of European and North American enterprises and small to medium-sized businesses conducted in last year's third quarter, Windows 7 was on almost half of respondents' PCs, and Windows XP had a 38% share. Respondents further said that they forecast having Windows 7 on 60% of their PCs a year later, and Windows 8 on 26%. Factors affecting enterprises' interest in an adoption of Windows 8 are varied. IT pros aren't generally convinced that Windows 8 offers their companies a marked improvement over Windows 7, which has proven to be a solid, stable OS. Many, many, many people in industry figure, if it ain't broke, don't upgrade it. Because upgrading costs money that they don't need to spend if it isn't broken.
And retraining.
That's because there's a lot of skepticism over how the so-called modern UI interacts with more traditional one. That is also included with the new OS for running Windows 7 applications. There isn't a truly seamless experience Between the two interfaces, Johnson said. He's a master of understatement. Another concern are the cost and effort involved in upgrading desktop OSs across an enterprise, a process that causes migration fatigue and makes companies unlikely to embark in it shortly after finishing one that they just did with Windows 7. With Windows 8, Microsoft is hoping to improve Windows' weak presence in tablet devices, but iPads and, to a lesser extent, Android tablets remain the preferred options. So seriously, are you even intending to try Windows 8? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
But one nice thing, and like I've said before, you know, yeah, as far as the Macs and the PCs, you know, their operating systems for their desktops, you've got to be an expert on. But now we're seeing with the transition going to tablets. You know, I've got the Nexus 7. My girlfriend's got one of the iPads, the Mini. And I was able to set that up for her. I don't know Macs, but because of being a tablet, you right. don't need to know the interface. You can sit there and do the mundane stuff and just set it up. I was able to pull down all the apps that she wanted on it because they're just apps. And it doesn't matter whether it's a Mac or a PC, you know, an Android tablet. You can just do it. You don't have to worry about the OS, whereas on desktops you do. Right. So how this all gelled together it's amazing that it did, because it's not getting people frustrated. Oh, yeah, I just go here and I pull down this app and I grab this one. And so whether it's a Mac or a PC, it doesn't really matter. And that is what I think is leading to the big surge of tablets being so acceptable.
In the desktop wars, when you went to buy software, you had to buy a Mac version or a Windows version. Very few companies put both in the same box. A few but not very many. Now that we've got tablets, the App Store is built into an iOS, and that's where you get your apps. And the Play Store is built into Google, and that's where you get your apps. So you just have to know that one little bit first, and usually the help screen shows you that when you first turn it on.
And both of those operating systems are dead simple. You want to start an app, you tap on it. It doesn't get easier than that.
Yeah.
Android has a little more stuff going for it because we have widgets that we can put on the home screen. So I can just open my phone and there's my calendar right there. I don't have to click on anything. But other than that, they're fairly much identical.
Yeah.
And if you've got to learn all the hidden knowledge of swiping left does this, swiping half left does that, swiping slow left does this, down does something else, up does something else. People get confused. I can't tell you how many people are confused by Google Now. You swipe up from the bottom of the screen, and they swipe and they swipe and they swipe. You say, no, from the real bottom, all the way down off screen, do it. Just make it happen. And once they get it, they get it. But it takes time and it takes effort, and people don't want to expend. They'll expend the time and effort for one new gesture, like Google Now. But when it's you do this for that and this for that, it's too much.
Yep,
too much.
And Apple is sort of moving that way a little bit with the current OS. We have the Launch Pad, which makes your Mac look like an iPad with big icons for touching apps. And we're in the Mac community a little worried about what that might mean in the future. And Apple's developer conference coming up next month, we expect to see a bit of System 10.9, the next version, and we'll see how much farther they're moving toward that. Right now, that Launchpad is an option. And for novice users and new users, that's a nice option. Here's an app that says, you know, web browser. Okay, I can tap on that. But those of us that have been using the computers for a long time hate that stuff. That makes it too simple. So right now it's still optional, and the fear is in the next version or two, it's going to become mandatory. We're going to lose our desktop, and all you can do is click icons to launch apps. And we really hope it doesn't go that far.
Yeah, that would be horrible.
That's what happened to Windows. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't like it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's up?
Hey, so talking about Windows 8, now, this is coming from a guy who thought that Windows ME was all right.
Uh-oh.
Windows 8 really is uncomfortable.
I never liked Windows ME.
For my girlfriend, she, and I, for the life of me, can't really get a grasp on it. Like you guys mentioned, it's really meant for tablets. I have the urge to want to, like, touch the screen and move things because scrolling is just so uncomfortable with the home screen.
Yeah, now, are you on a tablet or on a desktop, laptop kind of thing?
Yeah, and even you can go to the, I mean, I'm not even sure what you call it, but it kind of looks like a regular desktop view. Not having
that
makes it uncomfortable.
That's why there's rumors that, and the current developer release of Windows 8 has a start menu back, and the rumors are they're going to add that to the consumer version as well.
Well, there's already a start menu, sort of, but you have to actually use it. And one of the real problems is that the stuff on the Metro UI is not connected to the stuff at the desktop. Yeah. So if I, for example, put a bookmark into Internet Explorer in the Metro UI, that bookmark is not in Internet Explorer at the desktop.
Right. And if more computers get touchscreens, then that might start making a little more sense. Even now, we see a lot of people who are used to touching their tablets, they'll start touching their laptops, and I do it myself. Even though I know it's not a touchscreen, I still instinctively want to touch it, the screen. And so as more laptops, it's basically the cost of the touchscreens. The more prices come down and more laptops and eventually desktops are able to have a touchscreen, then that type of tablet icon interface will probably become the norm. And so that's sort of why I was thinking maybe Microsoft is just a few years too early. We're not, but somebody has to be first. Somebody has to force it down your throat so you're used to it in a couple of years.
Right.
That's usually Apple. They were the first to kill the floppy drive, the first to kill the CD drive. And now, you know, most computers don't come with a floppy. And we're seeing now even some PCs don't come with CD drives anymore because everything's downloaded.
Right.
So they can save the cost and the weight by not putting it in.
Right.
If you want one, you buy an external one.
Right. No, but we feel your pain, Dave. That's...
Speaking of which, maybe... I'm not sure if you guys covered it yet or not. I just kind of tuned in a little while ago. I was reading the other day about, speaking of the new Windows, that there was talk about Microsoft charging monthly or yearly fees for the license for Windows?
They've already started that with Microsoft Office, and then Adobe followed suit with their Creative Cloud. They are trying to abandon retail boxes and forcing you into a subscription. And they did that with Microsoft Office a few months ago. Office used to be $120 for a single license and $150 for a three license. They discontinued the three license box, and now the single license box is $140. And the next step up is their family license. You get five licenses for $100 a year. But if you stop paying, they stop working. And so from the corporate standpoint, from Microsoft standpoint, that's good because people will keep paying. And we know we have
and
a guaranteed revenue stream.
And if you're doing it over the web, you can't pirate it.
Right. So it can't be pirated because you need an active subscription. So you'll just have to steal a credit card to steal a subscription.
Right.
In order to use the software. But most average people want a disk. And they don't want to pay for upgrades every year, which is what the companies want you to do. That's one of the reasons Adobe talked about their Creative Cloud. One of the features is that you always get the new version all the time. Well, I don't want to pay the $1,000 for a new version every couple of years. So now you're going to have to pay $50 a month forever if you want it to keep working.
Yeah.
Well, people are getting a real lesson in the economics of all of that because Google is still offering it for free.
Yeah.
As is OpenOffice.
OpenOffice,
exactly. I've just pushed people there.
Yeah.
We always tell people about OpenOffice.
I mean, OpenOffice even had it before, you know, I mean, you could save a Word document as a PDF.
Yep.
There was just all kinds of things.
But
you now have to have a desktop to do that still.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah.
If you want to do it in the cloud, Google Office, Google Drive is still free.
It's the familiarity. Mm-hmm. Most people, we had this conversation with someone this week. Most people are used to Microsoft Office because that's what they probably have at work. And so it makes the most sense to use what you're used to by buying Microsoft Office at home. Yes, there are free alternatives, but you're going to have to learn a different way of doing things, and people don't like doing that. So eventually, when the prices get too high or the licenses get too annoying, people are going to learn the new way of doing something for free.
Right. Also, of course, you can, if you want to do it, you can go to Zoho. Zoho also has its own office suite online, and it's pretty good. I don't know how much it costs. It's free. You can sign up for free. That doesn't tell me anything. But you can also look at that if you don't trust Google. We're going to take a quick break. We seem to have gone through an entire hour of this show. But that's not enough for us. We're going to do it all over again for a whole nother hour. All you have to do is wait through these magnificent underwriter messages, and then we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with all of you for another hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. How do you join in? It's awfully easy. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And we'll see you on the other side of all of that stuff on a whole lot more of Soundbites on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have our friend Scott from Buffalo on the line. Hi, Scott. What's up?
I have a Brother 2270 DW laser printer working with my Mac OS 10.8.3. The printer will print two-sided text edit files two-sided properly. When I want to do that with Word, it won't. In a print dialog, there is no choice for Word. I did found a YouTube workaround for Word, but the problem is now it prints the other side upside down.
oftentimes, that two-sided printing is hidden in a submenu. It's really nice when it's right on the main print dialog. On your print dialog, there's usually a submenu that it starts with. First, there's a hide details button and a show details button. So, if you see a button that says show details, there are more options available. It's one of those things they're trying to make it easier for novices, but I want the details.
Right.
And then in that details, there's usually a menu with additional options: layout, paper size, paper feed. And paper handling, paper feed, in one of those menus somewhere else will be a two-sided printing option. And in that two-sided printing option, there is often another option to do that duplex. In fact, it might say duplex versus two-sided printing. To do the duplex on the short side of the paper or the long side of the paper. And so it sounds like your workaround was printing on the short side of the paper, duplexing it. So when you flip it the short way from the short edge, then it's right side up on the back. You want to duplex on the long edge of the paper. So when you flip the long way, it's on the right side up. So it's hidden settings two or three pages, two or three menus down often.
Yeah, it's not commonly used either.
Right. I wish it was.
There's a preset. It says preset here. And then default settings, and I can use
below that presets.
It's print dialog.
Well, below presets, there's another set of menus. What presets let you do is save a setting. So once you find that print duplex, flip it on the long side, you can save that as a setting. So then you don't have to dig in that menu again.
Oh. Nice.
So I do that with my manual paper feeds and my automatic paper feeds, and it lets me pick from that preset menu instead of needing to dig down real deep in the list.
Great. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Yeah, some right. printers. I've got a Brother 9450 here. There's a two-sided button right in the main. How many copies do you want? But if I dig farther down inside somewhere, you can pick. Is it on paper feed, paper handling? You can pick which direction you want it to flip on. Right. And so that's other settings deeper in the print dialog.
Right.
Same thing on Windows. That you go into your print settings. There's three or four tabs and five or six buttons on each tab. Eventually, you'll find the piece you want when you get down there. The problem is getting down
well,
there.
Well, again, one of
it's
the problems.
The hidden knowledge.
Right. One of the problems with anything is that you can't fit everything on the front page.
Right.
That's why newspapers have more than one page. And so when there are some things that you want to do that you need to be able to dig into. One of the things I like about my Chromebook is that on this, because, well, it's from Google. So on the settings page, there is a search box.
Yes, that's nice.
And so I can just type in, for example, I'm interested in whatever it might be. I just type that in, and it brings up only those few places where that something about that is available.
Yep.
So if I type in display, I'll see my picture, and you know, because display a picture, and I'll see screen size, you know, your display size, whatever. But I really like that about that, and it would be nice if other people picked up on that.
Right.
If you could just type in two-sided or duplexing or any of those things, and it would just bring up all of the features or all of the choices you have for that feature.
Right. But then you have to, yeah.
Or have a button there that you could just do it.
Well,
but that's just
right.
what we're talking
do
about.
What?
You can't have every button.
Yeah,
right.
I know. Yeah, it's all problem.
Yeah, you know? Right. And that's the problem. It's the same problem we have with sound bites.
Yeah.
Where is everything? Some of it's below the fold.
Yeah.
You got to scroll down to get to it.
Get bigger screen. Get bigger screen.
Well, now
is what it is.
You have to make your window wider too, because sometimes it's hidden if your window is too narrow.
Right.
That's where double screens or bigger screens and smaller text.
Who was it? Someone was showing a 27-inch tablet at CES?
No, they weren't.
Well, so and the joke was it wasn't a tablet.
Right.
It was a tablet.
Yeah.
Table. Oh, one of those things that you see.
Right. A table tablet. Well,
I've seen the Microsoft Surface. I've played with it. For certain things, it's actually pretty
nifty. Tablets are pretty cool. Yeah. Be able to sit there and, you know, move stuff around. Because a lot of folks think, oh, no, that's just TV. No, those things exist. As a matter of fact, you can take some devices and set it down on it. It will read and grab photos or whatever.
That was one of the really cool features I talked about in the beginning of Surface. Is it's at a restaurant. Your bill comes up. You just slide all of your stuff towards you, and it splits the check for you exactly the way you want it to.
I saw a demonstration for the Toshiba table, and you know they did all the standard stuff. You put a camera on the thing, and it pulls all the pictures off it. But also, the guy had a Toshiba tablet, and so I was sitting across from him. I threw him a picture, and the picture zoomed right off the table onto his tablet. And then there was a screen on the wall, and I threw a picture that way.
Just like they do, like on Hawaii 5.0.
I want to know how much Microsoft is paying to get all. I want to know how much Microsoft is paying to get all their stuff on there, because the camera always pauses for half a second on the Microsoft logo.
Yeah,
no, that's a paid ad.
Well, I was seeing the other day where they were clearly using Windows 8 because it did the same thing.
Yeah.
You know. Good product placement,
Surface Pro with Windows 8. Elementary, was it?
Might have been.
We've been seeing that in some popular
Elementary,
shows.
Elementary, Castle.
When it pauses on the logo, it's a paid ad. When there's a post-it covering the logo, that's the set dresser who liked the looks of it.
Right. Right. Or nowadays, you find a lot of... clearly, Apple is not paid for product placement on certain things.
Yeah.
Because there'll be tape over MacBook, or there'll be... tape over the or some other logo over the shiny logo on
Ashton Kutcher got in trouble on Two and a Half Men because he was using his personal laptop on set in scenes with all of his company logos on the back that the camera could see, and so they yelled at him about
very
that.
Subtle.
Yeah.
All right, our next caller is George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's up?
Hi, need some help. When I go into a site using Windows Explorer, and I want to print out something, one of the choices that I have is to do a print to file. And that produces a file that I can find and I store, but it says it's going to store it under an *.prn type of file. How do I print the file to make a paper copy?
Print to your printer. Don't print to a file.
Right.
I want to print it into a file to hold it, but if I later want to print it out.
Oh, usually you print to a PDF for that, but that's an added function you have to put into Windows. It's built into the Mac.
Yeah.
And what do I have to do with a PC machine?
What is? I know there's free PDF plugins. To create a PDF.
I mean, when I try to pull the file up to print it, it offers me many, many choices. And at the moment, I got myself in a little trouble when I was calling you here. But
If PDF is listed, then that's generally what you want to use. It's a portable document format. That's what PDF stands for. That you can read and print, and other people can also read it. The PDF reader is free. But to create PDFs, Adobe wants you to pay for their Acrobat program, although there are some free PDF programs that we're frantically trying to look for on Windows.
Foxit.
Foxit as a browser. The Foxit PDF reader.
Yeah.
That adds a PDF plugin to print with?
I think it does.
Let's find out.
So I have to pay for that program?
No, Foxit itself is free.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't recognize what you're saying.
It's a PDF reader. It's like the free Adobe Reader.
Yes.
But it does give you PDF create options, so you can create a PDF with the free Foxit.
Now let me say, when I pull up the file and try to print it, it says choose the program you want to use to open this file, and it offers me Adobe Reader, Corel. There's about 15 different programs.
Yeah, it doesn't know what program
seem to work.
Yeah. It doesn't know what program to use for that file, which is stupid. Windows is creating the file. Yeah. Windows should have a viewer for it.
Yeah, it should, but it doesn't. What you want to do is install Foxit. The PDF reader has an add-on for printing to PDF. And so when you use that, when you go to, say, print to file, you'll see a menu choice for print to PDF.
Now, that spell that for me is Foxit.
You got it.
That's simple.
Yep, at foxitsoftware.com, and I've posted the link in the Soundbites forums.
Okay, and when I go there, you're saying that'll be a free program?
Yep.
It's a good one.
Are there any other alternatives? Not that I'm complaining here, but I'm trying to understand a little more broadly why Foxit chose to offer something and others have not.
Adobe created the PDF format, and it's a product they want to sell. They make the reader for free, but they want people to pay to create PDFs. Other companies don't.
The format itself is available in the public, so it's certainly legitimate for other companies to make software that will read and write PDFs. For example, if you were using the Chrome browser, there's actually a choice in the menu to print to PDF.
Now, when you say when they created the file or the format, is .prn the format?
Yeah, the .prn format is a printer file.
I see.
You can print them by sending. There's a print utility called .prn print. That's useful. I just don't. You know, PRN files used to be really useful 40 years ago. Not so much now.
Don't take me back too far.
Yeah, right.
Let me say, I can't even open, as I think about it, I can't even open the file, let alone print it.
Right. If you were to download a program called PRN Print, which I think is still available, you should be able to do something about that. But
you should at least be able to open it in Notepad, but it probably wouldn't. It'll be gibberish. It's a printer raster file, so it's what the dots on the printer would look like.
And it is gibberish.
Yeah. So that's how a printer interprets the code to create the dots on the page. It's not human readable.
Right. So I would ignore it entirely, get something like Foxit or use something other than Internet Explorer. And then when you go to print, you can say print to file and save as PDF.
There's a DOS command to send a PRN to a USB printer.
A DOS command.
Yeah.
Remember the PRN?
That's how old PRN is. Yeah.
Not 40, it's 41.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. So I would I would suggest either use Foxit or use a browser other than Internet Explorer, which we're always telling people to do anyway.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good. Thank you very much.
There you go.
Yep.
Yeah, I wouldn't get excited about.
Remember the days
if it's only
like
one screen, you can take a screenshot, and that's a is it still a JPEG in Windows? It's a ping on the Mac now.
But remember the days when you used to have to go to the DOS prompt, type in the file name. And then direct it to
LPT1
or PRN.
Yep.
Right.
And then hit enter, and then all of a sudden that dot matrix printer going back and forth, printing out your document.
Yep.
Like, oh, yeah, cool. Right. And then you go on to the next DOS command and start up another program.
Right.
The good old days.
The good old days.
Edlin. I still go back. Yep. Since we mentioned that lately, Edlin. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I discovered there's an actual editor called Joe's Own Editor under Linux that is that uses the WordStart command set.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So I was just having fun with that the other day because my fingers remember WordStart.
Nice.
Control K.
Well, isn't that where originally, though, Control F, Control V, Control X?
Yeah.
All those commands were first established, and they're still common to this day in most word processing.
Yeah.
And for folks that don't know, that's the copy, the paste, the insert, and the delete.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Steve from Irondequoit. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Well, basically, I want to say that I heard your earlier broadcast about using OpenOffice, and I've been using it for over 3 years. Where I had an overlap with, the Microsoft stuff.
Yep.
And it seemed pretty seamless to me, the interface between what you had to do on OpenOffice and what you had to do on Microsoft for Word and the spreadsheet stuff.
Yeah, Excel and that.
Right. I mean, I have noticed there may be some small differences as to setting up formulas and things like that, or other things in Word where you had to. But it was so seamless. I never noticed it.
Yep. I love OpenOffice. I've been using it for years. I now use LibreOffice, which is the next version. Listen, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
It is 25 minutes after the hour, and we are Sound Bites, and we still have our friend Steve from Irondequoit on the line. Welcome back, Steve. What's up?
Well, last week I called about the MixCDJ bar problem I was having.
Okay.
And you suggested doing the Security Tango.
Oh, yeah, the MixCDJ toolbar, yep.
Well, like I said, I had followed the online stuff that said how to get rid of the toolbar, and I did. And I used Revo Uninstall to uninstall all the things like the MixCDJ and the conduit and the double tap tab or something like that. All that came with it, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, and I did the Security Tango. And actually, the part that helped the most was going around and trying to find all the temporary files.
Yep.
And once I did that, that got rid of like 98% of everything, you know, type of thing. But I ran the Tango part, the main part, you know, with all the stuff, and the Stinger found a few things that I didn't know and got rid of those.
Yep.
And I kept going through until everything was clean.
Excellent.
And I couldn't find anything more. Then I went back and ran Spy Hunter. But Spy Hunter said, I still have 20 items in the registry and 2 items that are root kits.
Root kits are very, very hard to remove from your computer because they run at the root. So generally speaking, you need to take your hard drive out of your computer and put it on another computer to scan. And that's something that Dave offers at his shop because most ordinary folks don't have other computers to do that with.
Right. Well, right. He's going to use a laptop one.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if that would solve the problem. If I got rid of all that, I have the problem that it did something so that I can't open up new folders.
Yeah, one of those root kits is affecting the computer.
Folder. It hides folders.
Yep.
Yeah, you need to take it to someone and have them actually clean out all the root kits, which is generally not something, as Steve said, generally not something people do themselves.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's like when I had suggested that I use my restore disk that I created when I got the computer. You said, well, that would do it, but it would wipe everything out.
Yeah, everything is gone.
Right, and you don't want to do that.
And some rootkits can survive a quick format. You have to do a low-level format, which takes hours and hours.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, your best bet is to get that machine to somebody. First, back up all of your stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like I said, even if I had went back and used the disks that
I'm not talking about
I would have backed everything up to the hill,
right?
And anything I didn't back up would have been I already got disks for, you know, like any games or anything like anything that I had loaded. I hadn't loaded much on here other than would have been personal files.
Point. You want to back up all your personal files.
Yeah.
And then when you get the machine back after it's been cleaned, then you back up everything again and throw away the first disk because it could also be infected.
Yep.
You back up everything on your machine.
Yeah.
And on to, say, a CD. Wherever you're going to back it up, I don't care. But you back it up somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get that machine cleaned. Then you back up all your documents again and throw away that first backup, whether it's on a CD or a thumb drive or whatever, because those files could also be infected.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put them back ever, you'll just get all your same infections back.
Yeah,
so you back it up once in case there's a serious issue with fixing it, so you've at least got your stuff.
Cover your butt.
But when it comes back clean, you back up all your documents clean and throw away that one that might be infected.
How would I do that if I bring it to somebody to clean it? Doesn't that wipe out all the files?
No.
Not necessarily.
No, because see, what we're doing is we take that drive out, and a lot of these root kits and that type of stuff rely on your machine being the boot drive. So what we do is by taking it out and putting it on as a second drive, we can then run the utilities on it, then thus isolating the issues on your drive and removing them.
Mm-hmm. And where would these rootkits be resolved?
Could be anywhere on the hard drive.
They are on the hard drive. It's just that they recognize the mainframe of the computer.
It's the root.
And when they're on some other mainframe, they don't know what they're doing, can get to them.
Yeah, right? It's not something that the average person can get rid of.
It's the root of the hard drive. It's like weeds. If you don't get the root, they come back.
And every time you boot it up, it's looking for that boot sector so it can infect it. So by taking the hard drive out, we're not booting off of your machine. We're booting off of our hard drive so the boot... infections that are the root kits that are on your hard drive don't get to boot because we're not booting off your drive, and we can go in there and remove those root kits.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Right.
Okay.
And this doesn't take long. It's just that I'll be in the line.
It takes a while because you never know exactly what you're going to end up with in terms of how many rootkits and how deep they are.
I mean, yeah, it's just not a generic thing.
But yeah, it doesn't take long in terms of actual doing, but you know, you'll be in line behind other people.
It's gonna be in line behind other people.
Exactly.
Okay. And it is time consuming depending on how big the hard drive is.
Yeah.
You know, I can't sit there and say you bring it in, oh yeah, you can come back in an hour. No.
The problem is that to do this,
you'd be surprised how many people
folks that think, oh, can I pick it up this afternoon?
Sure, it won't be done, but you can pick it up.
Exactly. Yeah, you can pick it up, but it's not going to be done.
The real problem is that this is much more hands-on, much more labor-intensive than a lot of other things. You know, with some, for example, if you're going to do a test, it may be a 24-hour bench test, but you just start it and it let it run and you walk away. If you're doing MEM test, for example.
Yeah.
But with something like this, it's very hands-on.
Well, and also, once we take it out of the, you know, we take that drive out and we put it on our test bench and we remove that, then it's got to go back into your machine and run other tests to verify that it actually did get all the various rootkits on it off, along with then other spyware.
Well, then it's going to have to wait till I fix the machine because I dropped it and I broke the... it's a laptop, so I broke the screen.
That's never good.
Yeah, that's not so good.
I've got the ability to put it in.
Yep. Some people just plug it into an external screen, even their television, and use it as a portable desktop.
That's what I'm doing, just to get...
Yeah, no, we can get replacement screens. That's not a big issue.
You know... But, I mean, it's like...
They're a couple $100.
I'm not going to spend $600 someplace to go and replace what I could do just as well as they can.
Yeah.
Be careful. When you get into the screens, there's those little wires that you've got to be very careful for. Because you got to realize, on your computer, those wires that go from the motherboard on up to the screen, there's a small harness. And you've got to be very careful in the way you handle that and unhook them. Because you can easily short them out.
Because that goes through the hinge.
And the connectors are typically very, very tiny. Uses something called an LVDS.
And if they're not put back in there
right... Very tiny and very fragile connector.
And if they're not put back in there, when you pack them back down, you can then, when you go to close it, short the hinge.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I looked up my computer, and they had a video on how to do this.
Well, good luck. I mean, that's
And the thing is that luckily, if they had said we had to go through the hinge, I probably would have said, I don't know. You know, but, you know, I spent 35 years working on equipment, you know, and I have replaced, of course, the stuff I worked on was a bit larger. And,
right.
And I've replaced screens and things and stuff, you know, shall we say, large printers.
Right. All right, listen, Steve, I'm afraid we've got other people on the line.
Okay.
All right, thank you so much. Good luck.
Yeah, a lot of times when you get into big pieces like the screen or the glass, especially on laptops, it's very tough to decide if it's worth repairing. You know, it may be $300, $400 to repair it. You're probably better off putting that toward a new machine.
Right.
Even but we get the same question as Dave probably does. It's yes, that's cheaper, but maybe not as cost effective as a new machine would.
Yeah, really. Right.
Although this week we had a nice lady. She needed a new trackpad on her computer, and decided to buy a new one because the old one was 4 years old.
Sure, why not?
Sure, yeah.
Well, and okay. I'm seeing
it's like the battery guy had broken battery. Oh, I need okay. I'll get a new computer.
I'm seeing people who have bought a Chromebook,
yeah,
as their second laptop, and then decide that for not at home on because or just they were you know playing with them when they're at home they've got a desktop and when they're out on the road they don't need more than a Chromebook so there you are. All right, our next caller is Richard from around Equate. Hello Richard, what's your question?
Hi guys, I was trying desperately to copy my vacation pictures from a SD card to a disk, and in doing so one of the two drawers on my tower will not open up, and I think I accidentally deleted that drive because when I look in Device Manager, there is only one drive left. There used to be two indicators there under the DVD/CD-ROM drives. How do I bring that one back?
Do you actually have two CD-ROM drives?
Yeah, one is labeled DVD-ROM or RAM, and the other is DVD-RRW.
Yeah, but do you actually have them? The machines quite often will, you know, have those labels on there, but physically, is there two drives in there?
And two drawers used to pop out.
Okay, both used to pop out, and both used to be indicated under device manager.
Okay.
There were two.
That's what I was trying to get
at.
If you're lucky, one of the cables has come loose, either the power cable or the data cable,
or
more likely the drive has failed and needs to be replaced.
Yep.
Okay, so isn't it possible that I could have deleted one?
No.
Well, it's certainly possible.
But the next time you reboot, Windows will detect it, and it will bring it back.
Right.
What I thought.
Here's the other thing, though. There's really no need to have two. You can get along with one.
In early PCs, one was a reader and one was a writer.
Because
the writing DVDs were always slower than the reading DVDs. So a lot of PCs would throw two in there. But nowadays, reading and writing are all pretty zippy. Mm-hmm. And as we were mentioning earlier, a lot of PCs don't come with any DVD drives anymore because everything is downloaded these days and don't use discs.
I see.
But if you're going to do that,
the drive that is, or the drawer that will open now is DVD. I think it's ROM in small.
That's a reader only. DVD ROM is read only.
Mm-hmm.
And the DVD RW is read and write.
Yeah, so that's the one you'd have to replace that other one though.
Okay.
If you want to do any burning,
might want to think about replacing it with a Blu-ray burner because, particularly if you're saving pictures. You get a whole lot more on a Blu-ray disc than you do on a regular disc. But, of course, a Blu-ray disc cannot be read in a regular CD-ROM.
Right.
Yeah, Blu-ray reader, yeah.
I know that, yeah. So this DVD ROM, I think?
ROM,
yeah,
yep.
That's DVD CD-ROM, yep.
I can only view things. I can't burn to them.
Great.
Okay, guys, thank you.
You're welcome.
All those old acronyms, ROM and RW. RAM, DVD RAM, was actually a different mechanism. It was an early attempt at a rewritable optical format. Apple was big on DVD RAM for a while. But RW won the format wars. And then there were wars between plus and minus.
Right.
When you look at a disc and it says CD minus R, most people think that's a hyphen, or DVD minus R. It's not a hyphen, it's a minus, because DVD plus R is a different format.
Right.
So Apple calls their drives a super drive, because it does plus and minus, R and RW. So it does all of the formats.
Most of them do now.
Yeah, most of them do now, yeah. And a lot of companies call them multi-drives. But, all those different formats, you know, they were competing formats at the time, you know, like beta versus VHS. And in the optical standards, what eventually happened is they all merged together and all the drives can read pretty much all the formats.
Right. And like we said, CD-ROM, ROM stands for read-only memory. But if you're going to look at saving pictures, if they're just for you, for archival purposes, I personally would look at a Blu-ray player since you can get so much more on a single disc.
The CD is 700 megs. DVD is the single layer are 4 gigs. Double layer is 8 gigs. Blu-ray is 25 gigabytes per side, and most of the discs are double-sided, so you can get 50 gigabytes on one Blu-ray disc.
But now you have to worry about how long will they last. That's why the Kodak discs were so nice. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenik Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and Joe's on the line, all the way from Greece, New York, or perhaps he's not.
But he had a question about the podcast, and the problem is that when the server crashed, the URL for the podcast, in essence, disappeared. So inside of iTunes, if you were subscribed to the podcast, that feed is now empty. We have a new podcast feed running on the current website that you can get to from the front page. There is a podcast link. But what we're working to do is if we get code on our website that Nick is going to work on this week, then Apple will find that the new link, and everyone that was subscribed to the podcast will start getting the new podcast again. In their existing link. So you can link to the new podcast feed from the Soundbites website, and you can download the shows from that link. It is, yep, you have to go about two-thirds of the way down the page. You can get to the old shows and subscribe there, or eventually we'll have the old podcast URL from iTunes automatically pointing to the new link, and you'll start getting them again automatically.
Right. So we'll make sure that, that happens this week. All right, back to the phones. Vic from Irondequoit. What's up, Vic?
Hi, guys. I've been trying for a solid week to install the update for OpenOffice, and every day, I try it once a day, and every day I get the same error. It's called Installer Integrity Check Has Failed. Common causes include incomplete download and damaged media. What do I do?
Have you tried downloading it again?
I've been all week. I've done it for at least 7 days.
Ouch.
What were you downloading again?
OpenOffice. There's an update.
Is there an alternative download site? Some websites have primary downloads and alternative downloads.
Yeah. that I don't know. I just clicked on, when I opened up OpenOffice.org, I clicked on the help and it says check for updates. That's how I've been doing it.
Yeah, but when you go to the updates, what Steve's talking about, there's sometimes you can pick from the primary page to download or an alternative.
And you may want to download the full thing again and not just an update.
Okay, I'm looking at the page right now. It doesn't give you any choice on this one.
Yeah, it's just straight download.
Yeah.
And you're definitely downloading the latest version.
Try the direct link or another mirror.
So link right from openoffice.org.
Right, or click on the mirror, and it should take you to a mirror site to download it.
I don't see a mirror.
When you click on the download button,
okay,
it takes you to a new page at SourceForge.
Got it, I see, okay. I see it's a direct link or mirror.
Right, so try one of the mirrors.
Oh, okay. Now the mirrors are like out of the country.
Some of the other ones are in U.S. Yeah, there's one in Tampa. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so you try a mirror in some other location, and hopefully that one will work better.
Yeah,
for you.
Yeah, because that main file could have been corrupt. Who knows?
Are these out of the country websites? I mean, are they? Is it scary to download from one of them? I mean, I've never.
They can
done
be
it.
Scary just doing it from the U.S. There's no guarantee.
But theoretically, OpenOffice has checked these sites to let them mirror.
Okay, all right.
Actually, these are from SourceForge. They're not directly from OpenOffice.
And right.
SourceForge is a reputable site for mirroring.
Okay, so I should have confidence in using any one of these.
Right.
Ones. Yes.
The other question is, you might want to try LibreOffice. Which was one of the forks when Oracle bought Sun and acquired OpenOffice in the prospect. A lot of people were annoyed by that, and a bunch of them forked OpenOffice into LibreOffice, so that it's not part of Oracle.
Bunch of the original programmers of OpenOffice.
Yeah.
Can you have both OpenOffice and Libre on the same computer?
I believe you can.
Yeah. Why not?
I don't know. I was just curious if they were going to be conflicting.
No, it's just like having OpenOffice and, say, Microsoft Word.
Yeah, I've got OpenOffice, I've got LibreOffice, I've
can
got
have
NeoOffice.
Yeah, you can have multiple browsers. I mean, you can have multiple programs. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to try that. I'm going to download it
thing
right
of
now.
It is, though, all right, here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
When you're installing it, sometimes they will say, do you want this to be your default word processor that? You're going to have to make the decision there, but take your time and read through what you click.
Right.
A lot of folks get click happy, and they just go, yeah, and then all of a sudden things have changed. Say, like on their default viewer for pictures. They loved, say, Picasa, and all of a sudden now Microsoft did an update, and Now, that's the default. So you got to take the time and read what you're clicking on and agreeing to.
I will take care. That's for
okay.
sure.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
Bye.
Yeah, I have been using LibreOffice much more now, and I like it. I mean, the differences are absolutely minimal, but
yeah.
I think I like it a little better. I think it actually is a little faster.
Hmm. So but like nice. I say, folks have to take the time. I've heard that so much lately. Well, change this. Yeah, because you agreed to it. No, I didn't. I said, yes, you did when you were installing because you just went, yeah, because you're so used to installing stuff. Folks have to slow down.
And that's
a
where some of those sneaky toolbars come in. And sometimes you have to scroll because it's down farther.
Oh, yes.
I've seen some agreements where you have to agree to continue. If you don't actually scroll to the bottom of the agreement, it won't let you continue.
Yeah, Apple does
You
that.
Didn't read the agreement because you didn't scroll down.
Yep. You got to go all the way down to the bottom. You just can't hit enter and by default accept it.
And then you have to hit agree again to confirm that you're agreeing. South Park did a great routine on
confirm the confirm.
Yep, the human sent iPad that one of the kids got taken for medical experimentation because it was in the agreement that he agreed to. And all through the episode, everyone was incredulous that he didn't read the agreement. Well, how can you click agree without reading it? Because that's the norm in South Park, apparently.
There's a great right.
So Butters was reading the agreement, and on page 148, I agreed to let Apple take me for medical. I'm going to click no.
Oops.
Then they had to do the Toron Ra with the Apple Genius. That is a great episode, the human sent iPad. You gotta watch that one.
There's an XKCD, Randall Monroe comic, that is the devil pops up behind this programmer. And says, ha, I have come to claim your... No, you haven't. Yes, I have. Nope, read the agreement. What agreement? Right there in front of you. By entering this room, the devil agrees to... You can't do this! Yeah, I can. It's just like the software agreements that clearly you wrote. By entering this establishment, you forfeit all rights to the soul of blah, 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 blah. It's very funny. Because so many times we...
Found it.
Yep, there
Faust.
It is. Faust 2.0. because so many times, one of the things that people complain about is that a lot of software agreements...
like the tip. The hidden text, yeah.
A lot of the agreements that we have assume that if you... Just say, if you install the software, you agree to this whether you read it or not. Well, they have the right to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you agreed to that. No, I didn't. Yeah, you did. By installing the software, you agreed to the terms and conditions.
Okay.
Get over it. That's simply that's the truth.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
So you either acknowledge that you are breaking the probably unenforceable contract, or you abide by the unenforceable contract.
Right. And that's part of the problem. Nobody knows, honestly, nobody knows, because it's never gone that far into court. You know, whether or not is it enforceable? Nobody's ever tested it yet.
Yeah.
They've tested some of the others. Like, for example, Microsoft used to say, if you bought this PC and don't intend to run Windows on it, we'll give you $20 or whatever it is for your unopened copy of the Windows CD back. And a bunch of Linux people showed up one day with their CDs and said, we want our $20. You have to read the stuff that you're agreeing to. Some of it is kind of scary. I was just reading in a book today, and one of the guys said, if 20 years ago the government of the United States had said every citizen must wear around their necks a radio tracking device so we can see where they all are, the country would have gone up in arms.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're voluntarily buying them and sticking them in their pockets.
Yep.
In fact, we talked about that last week with the iPad pacemaker issue. The iPad magnets in the iPad will interfere with pacemakers.
Right.
Pacemakers are designed to shut down with magnets. It says that in the iPad manual that apparently this girl read, and it suddenly became internet news because No one ever read the manual.
Yeah.
And Apple's manual also say things about you can't use them in nuclear reactors or on submarines.
Yeah, Windows says the same. Says the same thing. I'm sure Linux does it. Linux probably says, no, go ahead and use it. All right, listen, we're done for another week. You've wasted 2 hours of a perfectly good life just listening to us blather. And you're free to go about your business in the real world. We'll see you next week at noon right here on Jazz 90.1. In the meantime, George will be coming in just a couple of moments with the best German music you'll hear all week. For Dave Enright, Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. We at 55 minutes after the hour, we're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.